This is Remarkable. Welcome to Remarkable, a marketing podcast for podcasters who aren't marketers. I'm your host and teacher, Dave Mooring, and I want to know what it takes to stand out, get noticed, and build a committed audience of listeners and fans. I'm on a quest to find out what makes a podcast remarkable, and I invite you to join me each week as I interview other podcasters, experts, and marketers. The Remarkable Podcast is part of the Super Simple Podcast Network. If you'd like additional marketing resources, early access to my free podcast marketing course, and to be notified when I release future episodes, head on over to theremarkablepodcast.com. This is episode number 2. In this week's episode, I get to have a conversation with another podcaster I met in person at the Podcast Movement Conference in 2015. He's full of great information on podcasting, and we cover everything from how to move people from your podcast to your email list, the importance of networking, which type of show is the most difficult to get off the ground, and even one big reason why you shouldn't start a podcast if you haven't already. He's one of a handful of people I've been wanting to connect with for a while, and he's someone I have a lot of respect for. He spent nearly a decade working in online media strategy, production, and marketing. He's been a featured speaker at conferences across the country on leadership, content strategy, and podcasting. He's the host or co-host for a total of 5 different podcasts, 2 sports podcasts, a marketing podcast, a personal development podcast, and a podcast about podcasting. And last but not least, he currently serves as the VP of marketing for Rainmaker.fm. Here's Jared Morris. Hey, Jared.
Hey, how are you, Dave?
I'm good. How are you doing today?
Doing very well. It's good to talk to you.
Yeah, you too. Thanks again for your time. I appreciate it.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I'm excited about this. Sorry I had to reschedule.
Yeah, no worries. No worries. Out of curiosity, do you do a lot of interviews? Do you have a lot of people calling in or contacting you other than your internal copy blogger folks?
Yeah, it's picked up more. I think certainly since we started Rainmaker FM, and then especially since we started doing the Showrunner, and just going out and speaking about it. So I've had, and especially after events like Podcast Movement, there typically tend to be kind of a rush of them.
Yeah.
And I love doing them. It's always really fun just being able to talk with other people and get their perspectives too, you know, hear about what they're working on.
Yeah, well, very cool.
I really like it.
Well, cool. I'm glad we had a chance to meet.
Yeah.
In one of my short list of, you know, there's always multiple reasons why you go to something like that. But for me, one of them was to get to meet some of you guys from, Rainmaker Digital now, formerly Copy Blogger Media, right?
Yeah, the company, Rainmaker Digital. Well, and it's always a thrill for us to be able to meet people who have read the content or bought the products. And just in general, I mean, I agree with you, going to a place like Podcast Movement, that for me is one of the thrills, is not only getting to meet people who listen to your show that you've emailed with, but also people whose shows that you listen to. I mean, that's what makes those events so great, you know, because it makes people real as opposed to just voices or their words in an avatar on a screen.
Yeah, and that's sometimes if you go too long without meeting people, you start to put them on a pedestal or you think they're better, you know, it's
right.
They become unrelatable. So it's good just to know that we're all people and we're all just trying to do our thing. And
right, exactly.
And so,
and we all have different areas of expertise that we can help each other with, and you know, ways that we can overlap and work together. So yeah, it's great.
Yeah. So
I wanted to mention this. I love your tagline for yourself under Who Is This Dave, where you say, I teach marketing to people who are great at something other than marketing.
Thanks.
That's fantastic.
Thanks.
I really like that.
I appreciate it. It took a long time to land on that. So.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, but that's just such a like perfect, punchy, short, succinct, powerful line.
Thank you. Well, that means a lot coming from you as a copywriter yourself,
and as someone who loves writing taglines. I mean, that would be a dream to come up with one like that, because that's really good.
Well, that's a good segue. Tell me a little bit about your background. How did you get into marketing in the first place?
Boy, that's a great question. You know, I kind of got into it by happenstance, frankly. You know, I grew up with a sports background, so I kind of always figured I would end up doing something in sports, and then got derailed a little bit in college thinking I would start, you know, that I would go to Hollywood and be a screenwriter, you know, so kind of went through all that and did a whole bunch of different things. And when I got out of college, I ended up teaching for a little while and then did a little bit of sales, did a little bit of management, didn't know exactly what I wanted to do. And eventually settled on, well, I'll go to law school and I'll do that. That'll give me some kind of anchor and that will propel me forward. And so in the process of doing some work for a lawyer, I'd moved to Dallas. I was doing some work for a lawyer in the interim while I was studying for the LSAT. And I went to take some files to him one day at a coffee shop. And he was there talking with a friend. And, you know, so I started talking with the friend as well. And the friend told me about, he had just started basically a digital consulting agency for small businesses here in Dallas and needed someone to do some part-time work writing press releases and just creating some content, and I like to write. So I figured, sure, you know, I'll help you out on a part-time basis. And that guy was Derek Schaefer, and we ended up becoming business partners. And that was really my foray into online and really into marketing, because I had never really studied it formally before that, done anything. And, you know, that's where I, you know, got introduced to WordPress and social media and SEO and all of that, and basically learned it as I was working with our agency clients. And we eventually developed a hosting platform that became Synthesis. And That's how we came over and became part of Copyblogger. And, you know, you and I were just talking about, you know, how long you've been reading Copyblogger and how much it, you know, helped you with some of these projects you were working on. And I wish I had found Copyblogger before I actually became a part of Copyblogger, because back when I, you know, when I first started working with Derek, I basically asked him, hey, you know, I need like a sandbox to get my hands dirty in, you know, like learn this stuff. I'm not really good at just reading and understanding. Like, I need to actually go do it. And so I was like, just, you know, can I just start a site and just let me kind of do it off on the side to practice this stuff on my own? He's like, yeah, sure. And so I ended up launching a site. That site was Midwest Sports Fans. And it ended up doing really well to the point where it was getting millions and millions of hits a month and kind of became its own little mini profit center, because we were selling, you know, we were putting display ads on it. And, you know, that site was getting so much traffic that's why we ended up developing the hosting platform, because Derek figured he had a way to do it better, and he did have a way to do it better, and we realized a lot of other people could use it, and that's how it all came about. But what I always look back on and I'm very frustrated by is how much traffic that site got, but how little an audience was built. Because it was just like, it was like the hamster wheel. Like, I was really good at getting up and getting the viral traffic, and I had all the contacts to send viral stories out to, and hey, here's this video, let me write up a quick little blurb about it, get it out, and, you know, get it on Dig and get it on Reddit and all those little things, but didn't know about building an email list, didn't know about really building an audience that would sustain. All I looked at it was from the traffic perspective, not, you know, build something slow, steady, that's going to last, develop a relationship. You know, it was all about get the page views, because that's how we're making the money.
Yeah.
And if I knew then what I know now, what I've learned just by being a part of Copyblogger, you know, and the projects I've worked on at Copyblogger and the great people, Rainmaker Digital, the great people that I get to work with, you know, I could have done so much more with that site and with that traffic. So, you know, so that was really kind of my foray into it, and I learned a lot of lessons, and in hindsight, I've learned a lot more by analyzing what I did wrong back then, you know, within the context now of having a much better idea of what the right things are to do.
Yeah, and how long ago was that when you were generating the traffic but weren't aware of building the audience at the time?
I launched Midwest Sports Fans in August of 2008, I believe.
Okay.
And it ran it for about a good 2.5-3 years. I mean, really... You know, and then probably there was like about a year and a half there once it really got going and I was really, you know, putting a lot of time into it. There was a good year and a half where that thing was just churning out tons and tons of traffic and making really good revenue. I mean, for, you know, for display ads, you know, it was making really good revenue. But man, it could have done so much more.
Yeah.
So much more.
Hindsight. I was telling somebody not too long ago that I quit blogging around the time that Pat Flynn started blogging because I thought that I was too late to the game.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I should have stuck with it, I think.
Yeah.
So who have you looked up to, or who did you learn from? You said you kind of dove head first back in the, you know, around 2000, sounds like 2007, 2008, 2009, somewhere in there. where were you going to learn about marketing? How did you use your self-taught, correct?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, a lot of it was just, was just Googling as questions would come up, Googling, reading. At that time, I viewed a lot of it through a sports context because that's the project that I was working on. And so, I learned a lot from a lot of the, the big sports bloggers that were out there, at that time. Like I said, and I wish I had kind of had better direction for, for where to go, who to learn from. I remember going to ProBlogger a decent amount back then, but for whatever reason, I never ended up on CopyBlogger, but I went to ProBlogger several times, especially not on purpose, just by Googling and would find ProBlogger, especially when it came to ads. But it wasn't really until I got to CopyBlogger that I really found a place, obviously, to get a much more structured education and really found mentors in the marketing space and especially the online marketing space who totally opened up my eyes to what I was doing wrong, what really works, and not just what works, but what are the time-tested principles that work, not just the latest flash in the pan.
Yeah, that's a great point, and one that I specifically want to ask you about is, as I've noticed over the years, just kind of watching from this side of the internet, as far as Rainmaker Digital and your long play, and you're not the only company doing this, so I'm kind of keeping up with both sides, but where or why have you taken the stance to avoid some of the things that seem to be working even in the short term? And I would use the example of like the pop-up windows for collecting email addresses and things like that. How's the decision been made, even though some of the studies seem to point to those are successful at getting a higher email sign-up rates and things like that, but it clearly you all decide to avoid those types of things, at least in the short term.
Yeah, boy, that's an interesting example too, because we've had a lot of internal debates about that one specifically recently. Because you're right. I mean, CopyBlogger has never used those. And I don't know that it will always be that way. Mm-hmm. I can certainly see a time in the perhaps even not too distant future where we do use them. And I've used them on some of my side project sites and found them to be pretty successful. But I think in general, for everything, I mean, obviously we take our cue from Brian in so many ways in terms of the direction that the company goes, the direction that the content is going. And he just tends to be such a thoughtful and meticulous and methodical thinker. And, so everything is thought out, many, many steps ahead. And I think when you do that, you can't really afford to get caught up in darting this way and that and trying all of these newfangled techniques that are coming up. Now, certainly you have to be ahead of the curve. And I think you have to recognize what is something new that is built on solid principles that are proven in the past, but it's a better, more efficient way to do it. Now, maybe that's something that you do. But some of it that's just brand new that everybody's rushing to, it's like Periscope. Periscope is like that right now.
Yeah.
Where everybody's rushing to this, and there are certainly people who are being successful at it, but it's because they're building, it's an extension of what they were already doing that's working. For someone like Lewis Howes, Periscope is perfect because it's an extension of what he's already doing. And so it's helping him take that to the next level because he's using it in a smart way.
Right.
Other people might be abandoning something that's working just because this is the shiny, flashy new thing, but it's not really an extension of what they're doing. It's taking them off on a divergent path that isn't really in the direction they should be going. And so I think, at least in my history in the time I've been with CopyBlogger, I think that's helped us is not getting caught up in a lot of that, and maybe you miss something new here or there, but just staying on a path, a very fundamentally sound path with what has worked in the past, what you know will work in the future, and just be careful about running and jumping on the next big thing just because other people are doing it.
Sure. Sure. And to kind of follow up that question, I know for a while there you've been doing a push for the Showrunner course. Mm-hmm. What are some of the behind the scenes discussions that you all have had about conversions and about getting people from the audio from podcasting to actually get to a site and sign up? What was your strategy for doing that? And what are some things that you maybe considered that you didn't do?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, we had tons of conversations about that. You know, that was a really interesting experience for me because it was my first time, you know, being in charge of a course. Obviously, Johnny and I ran that together, you know, and so it was my first time, you know, seeing a course through from the beginning, you know, developing it, you know, kind of being in charge of the marketing of it. And it was, as you can imagine, I'm sure, it was an incredible resource to have people like Brian, people like Robert Bruce and Sonia Simone and Chris Garrett, especially, to be able to bounce ideas off of people who have been there and done that.
Yeah.
And who can really help with, okay, here's what works. Yeah, that's a good idea, but here's what will probably happen with it. And, you know, and one example of that is, you know, for the course and for all of our products, you know, we have a 30-day money-back guarantee policy on that course. So people can sign up. If they don't like it, they, you know, at the end of 30 days or any time in that first 30 days, they can cancel. Well, obviously, it's a digital course. So that means people can go in, they could download every video, and they could just cancel immediately if they wanted to be a jackwagon.
And, right.
You know, I kind of thought, well, okay, you know, what do we, is that okay? Like, you know, and I guess I was kind of thinking negatively, like, all these people are going to do that. And it was nice to have someone like Chris, who's done launches so many times before, to basically say, look, there probably will be a few people that do that, and that stinks. But let's focus more on the good customers. You know, focus more on the people who are going to act within the spirit of what's right. You know, like they're going to get in there, they're going to try it out. Maybe they realize it's not for them. They cancel. That's what the 30-day money-back guarantee is for, not just for someone to come in and take advantage. And if you spend more time focusing on your best customers instead of worrying so much about your worst ones, you're going to build a better relationship, and that's going to be someone who will be a customer for your fourth, fifth, sixth product down the road. This other person, they were never going to be your longtime customer anyway.
Sure.
You know, and then adding a little, you know, something to the lecture. He said, you know, one thing that you can do is add a little something to encourage people to stay after 30 days. And so for people who joined the pilot program, we actually do a podcast review for those folks. And the podcast review only became available on the 31st day. So for people who actually stayed through, decided it was for them, now you get this extra thing. So there's kind of an incentive there to help, you know, to encourage people, maybe if they're teetering on whether to keep it or not, to encourage them to stay. So, you know, just being able to have, you know, someone like that again, you know, who's been there, done that, that the value of that experience was huge. And there were tons of conversations like that, because some ideas I had were, you know, it's just like, no, we tried that, it doesn't work. And other ideas were, you know, yeah, that's a good idea, go for it, you know?
Yeah, no, that's great. And that's a great tip as far as making sure that you have some ongoing value that kind of ups the ante before, so people know that if they stick around, that there's value in sticking around if they're on the fence.
Exactly. Yeah.
How did you get people to go from listening to you? I know you have a lot of listeners, and I'm sure you and Johnny started off with probably quite a bit of an audience just from your other activities and other podcasts. How did you get those people to get over to the Showrunner, and was that successful in what you were doing?
It's a good question. I think, you know, Johnny, with what he has built at Hack the Entrepreneur, probably had a more built-in audience for a podcast about podcasting than I did with some of my projects.
Yeah.
And I think that helped. Obviously, having the built-in audience of Copyblogger and the Rainmaker FM network was huge. That was, you know, that helped us go out the door with a much bigger audience than if he and I had just started it on our own. And I think the smartest thing that we did from the beginning, because Rainmaker FM, when we started the Showrunner, there was one email list for the entire network. And I think one of the smartest things we did was say, hey, we want an email list just for the Showrunner. You know, let us build our own email list. And so from the beginning, we built that email list. And very quickly, we realized that we were going to tie that into the course. And so one of the ways that we built the email list was to say, hey, when the pilot launch for the course goes out, it is only going out to the people on the email list. We're not putting it out publicly. We're not tweeting the link. It's not going up on Copyblogger. It's only the people on the email list. So sign up if you want to get details. And that really helped us kind of seed that list early on with people who were interested. Now, obviously, only a small percentage of those people ended up actually becoming customers, although it was a bigger percentage than I was expecting, which was really nice. But not everybody joined, but it got them connected. And a lot of those people who were enticed because they were curious about the course, but who never ended up joining the course, they're still on the list and they get our weekly updates. And they've become people that, you know, have become really good audience members, even if they're not customers, which is totally fine. And they could become customers in the future and they've become great advocates. So I think building that email list from the beginning and always having an extra incentive to get people on there, you know, I think you got to do more, especially for a podcast, than just say, get on the email list for updates. Because most people with podcasts, they're not looking to their email for updates. They're looking to their podcast player for it to come up in their feed. So if you want people to get on the email list, I think you got to give them more than updates. And I think that's one thing we've done well with the Showrunner is at first it was obviously the exclusive access to the pilot launch of the course. And then it was starting the essential elements of a remarkable podcast content series that people get now upon signing up. So there's something extra, but then they're on the email list and that helps you maintain that long-term relationship with them.
Yeah. And the case in point there is that I'm on your list and noticed before the podcast movement conference that you and Johnny sent out an email that says, if you're going to be at the conference, track us down. And so I responded and we were able to catch up that way. So,
which is great.
Yeah. It was the perfect little, scenario. So yeah, driving people to the email list for additional value is a great tip. Let me back up just a little bit because I'm not sure that everyone listening will know some of the background as far as what your involvement is in podcasting. So
sure.
If I can kind of jump back in time again, how did you get into the podcasting world? Because you're officially the vice president of marketing for the Rainmaker FM, which is podcasting for Rainmaker Digital, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And so how did you move from general marketing copywriting into the podcasting world?
Well, you know, I've always been interested in audio. It's so funny. I remember someone asked me this on an interview once, and I had never thought of it in this context, but this memory was triggered of way back in high school, and my silly high school friends and I would type up these ridiculous scripts of all of us on these crazy adventures and then record them as audio files. And we still have this CD. If it ever got out, we would all be incredibly embarrassed, of course.
That's
awesome. But we still have this CD of all these quote-unquote adventures, right? And we always joke about them, and, you know, I mean, they're all just filled with these ridiculous inside jokes. But I realized that was kind of my first foray into a podcast, you know, and I just did it when I was young and loved doing it. And I didn't get back into creating audio again until I was running Midwest Sports Fans. And Derek, the guy I was working with, he's kind of an audiophile. And so we had this extra office in our office, this extra room in our office. And he kind of made a sound studio out of it just because, you know, he's a musician. He just kind of wanted to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, hey, could I use that stuff? I've been hearing, seeing people do podcasts. I kind of would like to do some NFL picks and fantasy football picks. Would that be okay? And so I just kind of started doing, I threw some mud up against the wall, you know, to see what would stick, and did some interviews. And of course, none of them were very good and it didn't really catch on and I wasn't consistent with it. But that's kind of how it started. And I really enjoyed it, even though I wasn't good at it and it never went anywhere. And so when I came over to Copyblogger, the Internet Marketing for Smart People podcast had become the lead and it had kind of been dormant. And neither Robert nor Brian was really that excited about, you know, kind of taking it and helming it. And so I took it over. Pretty soon thereafter, Damien joined me. And so I think that showed, you know, Brian and Robert and everybody else that I had some ability in this and at least was enthusiastic about it. And so once the conversation came up about podcasting and starting our own network, you know, I was one of the people who had experience in it and who had shown enthusiasm about it. So I was fortunate to be in on those conversations very early on. And it's kind of gone from there. And it's just, I've naturally gravitated to it. I now run 5 shows, 2 on Rainmaker FM, 3 on the side, because I love doing it. And it's just one of those things I found, the more I do it, the more I love it. And so, you know, so I think it all kind of happened very naturally. And it's one of the nice things about working at Copyblogger is, you know, you show some enthusiasm and some aptitude for something, and you know, eventually you'll be pushed into taking on more and more responsibility in that thing. And so I've been very fortunate to be able to do that for something I really, really enjoy.
Yeah, that's great. So is that the majority of your time every week is spent on those shows, or is it still a small fraction compared to some of the other activities and responsibilities you have?
Yeah, I mean, certainly like the overall fraction of my life, yeah, because, you know, a lot of my downtime is spent doing these side projects as well.
Right.
You know, my fiance, she's like, you're always recording something. <It's> like, yeah. You know, and certainly when we were doing, when we were launching the Showrunner course, that ended up becoming a big part of what I was doing. And, you know, so now it still is, but we, you know, we have some new projects that we're working on. That, you know, that hopefully people will start to hear about, and we'll start to show people that I'm really excited about. So, you know, that's another great thing about working for Copyblogger is, you know, there's always a new horizon, a new kind of big project that we're working on. And so I've been fortunate to be involved in that as well. And certainly there's audio involved there too. So I'm getting to expand my horizons a little bit and keep doing what I love. So it's evolving as always.
Yeah, no, that's great to keep you interested, and you know, learning keeps us engaged.
Yes.
As well. So with the Showrunner, and I do recommend that people check that out. I've listened to quite a few of the episodes, and you do a little bit of an introduction in the first few episodes. But tell us a little bit more about the concept for the Showrunner, and how did you? I guess maybe some of the behind the scenes. How did you decide that that's what the project that you were going to do? How did you land on that?
Well, when we started talking about Rainmaker FM and we started talking about show ideas, I immediately said that I want to do a podcast about podcasting. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, by that point, obviously I'd been running the lead for a while. You know, I'd had, you know, a couple of shows that I was running on the side, and I thought I had a lot to say. Because one thing that I had noticed about people I had been talking to who were thinking about starting a podcast is there was a lot of trepidation about starting. And there were a lot of people who would get into it and couldn't get over any number of humps. And I felt like I had gone through all of that, you know, through all the shows I had started and stopped, through shows that I never started simply because I couldn't get over that trepidation. And I thought I had a lot to add to the conversation outside of the technical stuff, because I am not an audiophile. I don't know the technical stuff that well. Mm-hmm. And the nice thing is there are a lot of great podcasts about podcasting that cover that. What I didn't feel like there was out there, at least not that I had found, and not to my satisfaction, I guess, was a podcast about podcasting that talked about the mentality, and that as much as it educated people about the, you know, the components of an interview and all, and, you know, and obviously there's certainly a science to it, and there are steps and there are things that you need to do, how to launch, how to do all of that stuff. But the bigger picture about how to think, how to see yourself, how to view yourself in relation to your audience, how to create something bigger, how to look at it as more than just a series of audio episodes and think of it as a show, you know, an experience that you're creating. And so I thought we could really add something to that. And it was nice that, you know, Brian had struck up a relationship with Johnny, and we decided, you know, that we would end up doing a course together. So it made perfect sense for him to come join me on the Showrunner and for that to be our show together. And the name Showrunner just seemed to fit. I'd always loved that term. And my first introduction to it was with Vince Gilligan of Breaking Bad, you know, as the showrunner. And I remember listening to his podcast about that show and he, you know, going into the thoughts behind it and everything that went into each episode and what they were trying to create for their audience. And I loved that. And I viewed myself as that, but for a podcast. And I thought, that's such a great term. You know, let's take it and apply it here because it totally fits. It doesn't need to be just for TV. And I think, you know, I think in large part because we've really tried hard to give people good information, number one, because that's really what they come for. But also number two, because I think our enthusiasm for what we do really translates. I think people have really resonated with the show and with that big idea. At least that's a lot of the feedback that we've gotten. So, you know, it's what the experience has meant to me in terms of what I've learned just by doing it, and then the people like you and like so many other people who I've been able to share in the experience of them starting a show, or, you know, getting over a hump, or, you know, unlocking some new element of their audio, or, you know, relationship with their audience that they didn't know they could have. It buoys me all the time and gets me more and more excited for my own shows doing that. So it's just been, it's been wonderful, and I've loved doing it.
And you mentioned being able to team up with Johnny. And that's one question I have for you that we can learn from is how important is the networking aspect and the person-to-person relationships when it comes to, you know, not just an interview show, but any show. I know it takes a lot of people and you know, the networks help. So how much has that been an important part to you, or how important has that been as far as building relationships and networking?
It's huge. It's absolutely huge. I mean, networking is important, obviously, in anything. So, you know, that's always going to be important. I think certainly for us with what we do at Rainmaker FM, you know, having the team that we do is, you know, really helpful. I mean, Robert Bruce obviously isn't out front hosting shows and doing shows anymore, but he's corralling the entire production process and organizing it, which is a huge job. You know, it's a job for three people that he's doing. And he's got the help of, you know, incredible people like Toby and like Kelton and like Claire and Stephanie and everybody else who, you know, who helps out, which is just huge. And those relationships and really the trust among one another when you have a production schedule that's that tight is really important. But then, you know, when you talk about the show and, you know, I do, you know, the lead I do with Damien, obviously the showrunner I do with Johnny, I do the assembly call where I have three regular co-hosts, you know, Podcast on the Brink where I have one co-host, and then I have my own show where it's just me and I don't have a co-host. You know, so I kind of have, you know, I've kind of done all the different iterations, and yeah. I've done interview shows, obviously. So I've done all the different kinds of formats that there are. And, you know, you can't, I can't overstate the importance of relationships, because the networking is obviously huge for an interview show, because you've got to network and you've got to know new people and be able to bring people onto your show to continue to create a remarkable experience for your audience. But then you've got to have really good relationships with the people that you're hosting with regularly. Because I think people will really, you know, when it's a show with consistent, you know, co-hosts, like there's, you know, like with Johnny and I on the showrunner, where it's almost always the two of us, you know, people want to feel like they're part of something. You know, they almost want to feel like they're kind of on the, you know, with the in crowd in a sense. Like they're, you know, like they're eavesdropping on two friends talking about this subject where they're experts. And I think when you have a relationship, have a rapport with people, it makes it so much easier to take an audience on a journey, because they're having fun and they're relaxed and they're just kind of in it and they get your inside jokes. And I really think when it comes to long term, that's really, really important. And I'm seeing it more and more with these shows as they go on longer, how important that is, your relationship with the people that you're hosting with, because your audience will kind of follow that cue in how they view their relationship with you.
Now, what do you think is the most difficult style of podcast? You mentioned you've got several different scenarios. If somebody was just thinking about getting started, what do you, out of all those different scenarios with a co-host or multiple co-hosts or the interview or a monologue or teaching, what do you think is the hardest to get off the ground and get started with?
Oh boy. You know, they all have their challenges, because when it's just you, obviously you've got to come up with everything. When it's you and a co-host, you know, you've got scheduling issues that, you know, that you have to go through, and, you know, you could have, you know, there could be control issues there. There could be lots of things. I've been fortunate that I haven't had to deal with any of that, but I could certainly see, you know, that kind of friction causing problems. And then, of course, when you have an interview show, you've got to do a lot of scheduling, and there's a lot of time that you have to invest just in finding guests. For me, personally, I think an interview show is the hardest, just because I do not enjoy the legwork of scheduling interviews. So, you know, if you have an assistant who can do that, like Caroline, sure. Early has been doing a lot of that for us with Rainmaker FM, which is huge. And, you know, but I know a lot of people when they're starting a show, and me, when I was first starting, you know, when I was first doing my shows at Midwest Sports Fans, it was erratic because it was just hard to schedule. And so I think that one is the hardest, but I think it's really going to depend on the person. And I think you really need to, that's where, you know, kind of knowing yourself is really important, because, you know, if you're trying to do a show on a topic that you don't really know inside and out, trying to do it just yourself, you may get through the first six or seven episodes, but then you may really struggle to come up with content after that. So that may be the harder one, you know. And if you're with a new co-host, or if it's with someone that you don't work great with, you know, that one may struggle to get off the ground and get. So it, I think it really depends. For me, it's an interview show, but I think it's about really taking a step back and looking at your own work habits, what you really enjoy, and maybe where you find frustrations, and then kind of trying to project that toward how this podcast would go. And I think this is a great question, because I think people really should analyze it and think about it before they start, because that beginning momentum is important. I mean, everybody when they start a podcast has enthusiasm about it. You know, it's something that they want to say, that they need to say, so they're excited about it, and that gets you going. But that enthusiasm for almost everybody, you feel a little dip after about 7 to 10 episodes. So what gets you past that? And as little friction as you can have from your format and from, you know, just the stuff you have to do to get in front of the mic, as much of that as you can remove, the better off you'll be, and the more auspicious your beginning. You know, you'll be set up for success. So it's not something that you can't change, that you can't adjust as you go, but I think the better that you understand yourself and go out the door with one that fits how you like to work, the better off you'll be.
Yeah, and if somebody's already down the road of one format and they're realizing, or maybe listening to this and realizing that it's not working, do you think it's okay to change directions, or do you think they should try to taper off that podcast and launch something new? And I know you can't, it would probably be unique to each scenario, but what should someone consider as far as whether or not they should change formats or start something new? Any ideas there?
Sure. And you're right. It will depend, but in general, I would just say experiment, try something new. You know, I think, you know, with the showrunner, you know, we've switched our formats a few times, and finally after like 6 or 7 episodes, we settled on the one that we have now and really like it, but I'm sure it'll change in the future. With the assembly call for the first 2 years, it's a post-game show for Indiana basketball games. I know I can explain this to you because as someone from North Carolina, you get passionate basketball fans. But we started out just as a call-in show on Blog Talk Radio. And, you know, which was great and all, but it kind of got stale, I thought, anyway, after a couple of years. And so then we switched and did it as a Google Hangout. So there was actually a video component, and we took away the call-in part because it was really hard to try and screen calls. We had to always have a producer, so there was friction there. And obviously, you never know what you're going to get with a caller. And we actually had feedback that was like, hey, we kind of prefer just listening to you guys talk. And so we switched that, and I think it kind of gave the show a little boost of adrenaline, you know, and kind of took us to the next level. So that's what I would say is experiment, and be open about why you're experimenting and that, hey, this is an experiment. We're just trying something new. You know, if you don't want it, you know, maybe you have a show that comes out every Wednesday. Maybe you don't do it right away as a substitute for your normal show. Maybe you put out a couple new episodes as a bonus, see what the reaction is, and then see if you work it in. But I would say try something a little bit different because you never know. You know, you might decide to do some interviews when you've just been doing a monologue and you find that you love the interviews and this is a great new direction for you to go in.
Yeah.
You know, I've really found that a lot of times my preconceived notions of what is going to work aren't always right. They often aren't right. And it's not until I actually get into it that I'm like, okay, yeah, this is actually better than I thought, or whoa, this, you know, this doesn't work as well as I thought. So just try.
Yeah, no, that's great. What is an example of something I like to try to figure out what's not working as well, if you don't mind sharing? What's something that you've tried to do in the world of podcasting or marketing for one of the shows that just you kind of fell on your face or just didn't work out at all? Anything come to mind?
Yeah, there's a lot of them that come to mind. I got to choose one. So Podcast on the Brink is another Indiana basketball podcast that I host. And we were kind of going haphazard with it. We didn't have a set date, and we were just kind of scheduling episodes whenever. And it's funny because, you know, I thought about not doing that show anymore. The reason I do it is it's almost like it's like having a regular guest posting spot on a blog. You know, it's kind of that same principle. And obviously we've gotten a big traffic boost on the assembly call since I started doing that. And finally this offseason, I said to Alex, the guy that I co-host it with, and it's his site, I said, let's start doing this every week. Which, you know, which was kind of ironic because my main problem with it was that I felt I was spending too much time with it.
Right.
But what's interesting is that as soon as we started doing it every week, instead of this haphazard scheduling and not really knowing, it just became a regular part of the week. It became a lot simpler to plan. And I actually spent less time working on the planning and the scheduling because it just became regular and it was simple and it was streamlined. And so that was actually something that was successful. You know, I look back at The Lead and some of the early episodes that Damien and I did with The Lead. You know, we did that 11-part series on the essential elements of a remarkable blog post and some other ones. You know, one of our big goals was we really wanted to do just short 10 to 15 minute episodes. You know, we had them pretty well scripted and really tried to be real organized with it. And it just like, you know, people liked those episodes. I think they went really well. But he and I never really got into it. And it wasn't until we, you know, kind of threw the scripts away a little bit. I mean, we still have a pretty detailed outline that we'll work from, but we kind of threw the scripts away and made it more conversational that our chemistry really started to come out on the show. And we got so many more comments about how much more people enjoyed the show and how much better it was when we started doing that, bringing in interviews. So, you know, we thought, hey, keep it to a real tight 10 to 15 minutes. People appreciate this. It'll be shorter. And I think some people did, but people just weren't connecting with it as much as they have since we've been a little bit more casual with it.
Yeah, that's good to think about and think through as far as trying to find a balance. So I was not aware that you shifted quite so dramatically from fully scripted to just sort of an outline. Mm-hmm. It's good to know that's going well for you. I'm planning to do a few monologues myself, and I'm teetering between, you know, fully writing it out and just more of having an outline. So yeah. I'll be testing though and see what works.
Yeah. And that's, you know, and boy, I've gone through that too. I went back and listened to some of my old podcasts that I did for Midwest sports fans. And I pretty much scripted everything out back then, which you can tell. I mean, obviously, and I wasn't very good at reading a script. I think just through practice, I've gotten better now when I do have a script that I feel more comfortable that it's not quite so obvious. And it, you know, I go back and forth, you know, with the showrunner, we script absolutely nothing. You know, sometimes we won't even have a complete plan for what we're going to do with that show. And but that's kind of how we want it. Like, that's kind of the style that we've established. You know, for Podcast on the Brink, for example, I pretty much script my entire opening just because, I don't know, that's just, it just fits better that way. And for some reason, I'm not quite as comfortable riffing on that show as I am on the showrunner. And then the assembly call, it's a live post-game show. There's no time to do anything because as soon as the game ends, we hit play. You know, we hit record. So, I mean, it's, you know, it's one of those things, you know, practice and really just see how you feel more comfortable. And you may realize that different episode formats will dictate, you know, a different path for whether you go scripted or unscripted.
Who do you like to listen to, or what types of podcasts do you listen to on a regular basis?
It's a great question. Obviously, I listen to a lot of our Rainmaker FM shows, both just to stay up to date with what's going on in the network and right. Because I learn a ton. I mean, that's, you know, there's so many just talented, smart people, experienced people that work at Copyblogger that have shows. When I'm not listening to Rainmaker FM, you know, I try to get, there are certainly some marketing shows that I listen to, but I try to get out of that, frankly, and listen to shows that are a little bit different. You know, I love listening to Dan Carlin, whether it's Hardcore History or Common Sense. I'm a big fan of that show. And I really like story-based podcasts. You know, I like listening to This American Life. I like, you know, mystery show, you know, podcasts that really get into telling stories. I like listening to, you know, TED Radio Hour and some of those. So, and I just like exploring. Like, I found an incredible new fantasy football podcast. I was getting ready for some of my drafts a couple of weeks ago and was just kind of scrolling through and found a really, really good podcast where the guys give good information. Their production value is real high. And I actually learned a few things about podcasting just from listening to them and how they structured their show. And, you know, and it was, you know, I love that kind of exploration of just going and listening to new shows, because there's so many great showrunners out there doing great stuff that, you know, if you just listen to the same podcast all the time, you'll never find. So sometimes it's just about going out and trying something random based on a topic I happen to be interested in that day. And a lot of times I'll find something great about that topic.
Yeah, I totally agree. I'm the same way. Does any particular podcast come to mind if I ask you what's the most remarkable podcast that you've listened to or you continue to listen to?
The most remarkable. That's an awesome question. I feel like I'll be, you know, unfairly leaving some out if I choose one. I've actually so here as I talk right now, I'm actually opening up my podcast app because I want to. You know, I've got to say, I mean, in terms of remarkable, Radio Lab is incredible. And I know sometimes, you know, a radio, you know, public radio show and a podcast, like, you know, what's the difference? But I only listen to it as a podcast, so that's how I know it. I mean, in terms of storytelling, production value, that show is remarkable. I'm a big fan of Fresh Air as well, and I think the interviewing on that show is pretty remarkable too. Those would be the main ones that come to mind.
Have you come across a a podcast with probably a smaller audience or kind of an off the grid? Is there anything that you have in your list that I like to say most people probably haven't heard of, but that you find really fascinating or remarkable, unique?
Well, the Fantasy Footballers podcast is definitely one. So for anybody who plays fantasy football, that would be one to check out.
Okay.
Because it's really good. Yeah, that's probably the main one that comes to mind. I guess defining small is
and that is neither good nor bad.
Yeah, I'll tell you the other one is Standout Get Noticed by Christina Cantors. I talked about this one in Podcast Movement. I'm a big fan of her show. Just her, what she stands for, what she talks about, you know, about being confident, and how she shares stories of her own vulnerability and her own moments where she's not confident and how she overcomes them. It's a really, really relatable, it's one of those where a lot of times the best athletes don't make the best coaches. You know, like Michael Jordan would probably make a horrible coach because there's no way he'd ever be able to relate with someone who wasn't murderously competitive and as athletically gifted as him.
Right.
But a lot of times the guys that make better coaches are the ones who struggled as a player because they had to really be cerebral and kind of maximize their what limited ability they had. So they end up being really good coaches. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of feel I get with Christina's show, you know, where she's, you know, gone through all the struggles with having confidence but then teaches you how to do it based on her experience. And I think, you know, a lot of the shows that I like to listen to, they have kind of that element to it. You know, I hope that's what we bring to the showrunner, where it's, hey, you know, we've gone through so many different challenges and issues and have made pretty much every mistake in the book. You know, we've just kind of been doing this longer than most of the people who listen. So, you know, let us share with you our experiences and hopefully you can learn from them along the way. And I think, you know, a lot of times we underrate the value of just what we've learned through our own experience. And, you know, there's a lot of people that are starting at a place where we were once that could really, gain value from that. And so I think that's a great starting point for anybody who wants to start a podcast and who may be fearing that they don't have anything worthwhile to say. My guess is you probably do. It's just about mining your experience and then matching that with an audience.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree. And I think that comes into play for a lot of even small business owners or people that are doing something as an art, either writing or literally art on the side, is that people buy into it or they value it because it's that unique person's experience. It's what they have to bring to the table. So I'm always encouraging people to quit trying to be like other people. You have something unique to say and a unique experience, and let that shine.
Absolutely.
What do you see any trends in podcasting right now that you think are worth noting? I think we're in kind of an upswing or an up curve of the number of podcasts that are coming online and being adopted. Since you've been in it for so long now, do you see anything changing or any differences as far as when it comes to marketing or promoting or what it takes to get noticed?
Yeah, certainly there's a lot more podcasts coming, which is great. And I love seeing that. I think that, you know, really the biggest trend I'm seeing now is there's a lot more advertising on podcasts. And I think that's going to grow. I think we're kind of in, and blogging went through this too, you know, where it was almost like, you know, sites that had ads on their blog were kind of bad, and they were just out here to make money. But then it just became normal that pretty much all, you know, a lot of sites had, you know, were making money somehow. And I think podcasting has gone through that, where obviously you have, you know, big shows that came from radio and became podcasts. Well, they're going to have advertising because they always have, and that's okay. But a lot, we're starting to see the smaller shows get it too. And it's been really hard for smaller podcasts or even medium-sized podcasts to have advertising because there haven't been really accessible networks. You know, mid-roll is still really only for the really big podcasts. I mean, you have to have significant downloads to even get in there. You know, like Johnny was talking about on the showrunner, like he's in mid-roll, but he's well below what they normally will accept in terms of average downloads. And I think a big part of that is just because podcast metrics are so unreliable. But I think as metrics get better and advertisers start to trust, you know, the fact that they are talking to more affluent, you know, on average, more affluent, more engaged audiences, typically more educated audiences. And once they can kind of drill into the numbers, I think we will see more networks or, you know, start to pop up for mid-range and even lower range podcasts. And just it'll be easier for podcasts to have ads on their show, and it'll just start to be more widespread. I mean, I just did a read on Podcast on the Brink last week for DraftKings. It was the first ad read that I've ever done on one of my shows. And it's coming, you know. I mean, we've talked about doing it with Rainmaker FM. And so I think that's probably the biggest trend. And so, you know, for anybody who loves listening to podcasts just because of the purity and because, you know, quote unquote purity, and because you never have to listen to ads, I would say indulge, because that will probably change. Maybe not in the next 6 months, but I think over the next couple of years for sure.
So you mentioned that for Rainmaker FM. I'm curious as to, if you look at most of your web properties, that there's very little ads, and if there are anything related to an ad or resembling an ad, it's for your own product. But you mentioned possibly opening the podcast up to ads. What is your stance on that? Why is it different for audio versus written content?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I think it's still evolving right now. I think we're still deciding what we want to do.
Sure.
But we've had those internal conversations because, frankly, I mean, I think we all had high hopes for Rainmaker FM. I think it has exceeded those. I think it's exceeded it both in what it was going to cost to run the network, but then also how much reach we would have and how quickly it would grow. And so, obviously, you know, that it makes it interesting, and it presents interesting questions about where to go with it next, because there's an argument to be made that it can just be its own thing and its own profit center, and we can put ads on it and it will pay for itself. And, you know, that gives it value beyond just the, you know, what it's been as a content marketing play. And it will still be able to serve a role as a content marketing play, no matter what we do for the Rainmaker platform and for anything else that we, you know, that we come up with. But there's an opportunity cost there if all we do are Rainmaker platform ads, because there's a lot of people that would be interested in our audience that would be willing to advertise. And if there are, if there's synergy there between, you know, whatever the product is and that would be useful to our audience, you know, is that revenue worth taking? So it's really interesting. I mean, I think, you know, it's a little bit different. I know you asked, why is it different on audio? And I think it's different on audio for us anyway, because Rainmaker FM can really, in a sense, be siloed in a way that the other elements of our company can't be.
No, I mean, I can see that podcasts are consumed differently than your written content, and that if I'm reading your blog, it might make sense to go to Authority and go to the next level and just get additional written content with some video. There's not that transition so much in the podcasting world.
And I think you hit on it. I mean, you know, we've seen that our audience, you know, in a lot of ways, there's obviously a ton of overlap between Copyblogger and Rainmaker FM, but there's also a pretty distinct difference between the people who are audio people and the people who are written people. You know, we've heard from those people, you know, who would prefer that we stick with just written content. I think that makes a difference. And really, I just think, you know, for us internally, how it would work, it would, you know, it could make sense. So I don't know. I mean, I'm interested to see where we go with it. I mean, those are conversations that we're having, and we'll see what we end up doing. But I think, you know, I also think that there is just such an opportunity with podcast advertising now that it, you know, it could just be one of those things where the numbers make it, you know, almost something that you can't turn down.
And part
of that is just how hot podcasts are right now and how, you know, how much the network has grown, obviously the credibility that it has with the Copyblogger brand. So we'll see. I mean, that's, you know, something probably the next 6 months to a year, you know, I guess it'll either stay the same or you'll start to see that change.
Yeah. Do you think there's an opportunity, or have you seen anybody do a good job of offering a premium audio content? So you've got the free podcast, but then maybe getting people to subscribe to get some behind the scenes or a paywall for audio content. Have you seen anybody do that well?
Dan Carlin does that with Hardcore History, actually. I believe the 10 most recent episodes are available for free.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to go to his site and you can buy individual episodes, or typically he has series, you know, 4, 5, 6 episodes for a series, like the series on World War II or whatever it is. And you can go buy those. And he does a pretty good job with that. I'm trying to think of some other ones. You know, obviously, you know, I think you see John Lee Dumas do this where he's got his free podcast course, you know, and you can go, that's out there on iTunes and you can go download it and it's 10 quick episodes. And obviously that funnels people then into, you know, his podcasting course. So I think there are several examples out there like that. I think Marc Maron was doing that before. I don't know if he still is, where a certain amount of episodes are freely available and then you can go buy access to the archives.
Do you think that might be a growing trend as a viable way to monetize a podcast?
I think so. I think it's interesting. I think paying for the archives is really interesting because, you know, I think you've got to have something that is pretty incredible to sell the archives, you know, like, mm-hmm. Hardcore history is just unique and just one of a kind. I mean, that there is nothing else out there like it. And there's certainly no one else out there doing anything like what Dan Carlin is doing. So I think people will pay for that. I have paid for those archives. You know, Marc Maron is Marc Maron. He's got a huge audience, a huge, you know, numbers, and he's interviewed a lot of famous guests. I don't think for most people that selling access to your archives is probably going to be a smart way to go about it. But I think using a podcast as free content for audience attraction and as a way to start to seed your content library, because you can take a podcast and then turn that content into so many other different, you know, repurpose it into different kinds of content, and then use that as ebooks, use it as a content library, use it as a membership site, use it as a course. You know, I think the model that we followed for the Showrunner is a smart model, is the type of model that will really work, where you use the podcast to give people a lot of free education, to build the connection, and then you offer a course for the people who want to go next level, for the people who want the community, who want the access, who want the deep, deep dives into the information that you just can't give on the free podcast. You know, I think using it that way is going to be the smartest way for people like you and me and a lot of the people listening who want to start a podcast, but obviously don't want to just, you know, do it without it having a business purpose and without it eventually having a return on investment.
So what's next in line for the Rainmaker FM? I know you've launched, you had kind of a big launch initially, and then you've brought in several more shows. Or do you have another set of shows that you're going to be launching, or another season coming up, or what are your plans there?
We do, yeah. We have some new shows that are in the pipeline right now that will be coming out, which we're very excited about. And I think right now we're in the process of trying to do more things to mix up the content. You know, bring different types of people in for interviews, not just people, you know, again, kind of in the marketing echo chamber, but getting outside of that and bringing in different perspectives. Mm-hmm. You know, not just people talk, you know, who teach digital business to talk about digital business, but people who are actually out there executing it. You know, bring them in, get their stories, get their thoughts. You know, do some different types of cross promotions actually within our shows. You know, so I think there's some things from a network level that we can do to actually make, you know, for people who listen to the Showrunner, you know, maybe they don't know about, you know, Confessions of a Pink-Haired Marketer, but they'd really like it. You know, so I think doing more and almost, you know, kind of following the lead of what a lot of really successful radio stations do, you know, to kind of, cross promote and do some more of that. And then I think obviously long term, you know, we have some big decisions to make about the direction of the network and where we go. Because I think, you know, again, if we open it up to where it's about, you know, where we are selling advertising on it, you know, now that could open up a lot of different avenues for new shows and you know, so we'll see. I mean, there's a lot of things. I'm really excited about the future of it because there's so many different ways that it can go, but we've already built an incredible foundation in terms of an audience and learned a lot about what it takes to be successful with a network that now, you know, kind of with that knowledge and those efficiencies built in will allow us to get to the next level. And do it, I think, much quicker than it took us to get where we are now.
Are there any shows that have stopped or discontinued or that you plan on canceling or have already canceled that you can say publicly?
I don't believe we've canceled anything.
Everything's good?
Yet. Yeah. I mean, I think it, you know, it's one of those things. I mean, you know, we do have a lot of people who are doing shows for the first time. And so there's going to be a natural attrition, you know, and if it hasn't happened yet at some point, I'm sure it will, just because, you know, people who started a show, you know, something comes up in their business and they don't have time for it anymore and they can't keep doing it. And so if that happens, you know, we'll either find a new host for that show or that show will go away. you know, I think it's probably, it's pretty, you know, I think it's crazy that we've been doing it as long as we have right now, and there aren't any like that, where it's just that show's not happening anymore. You know, we had, you know, Hit Publish, you know, Pamela relinquished Hit Publish, but Amy Harrison took it over and kept that going. So I think, you know, we've been really lucky, really fortunate that the people who have taken, you know, who started hosting the shows have been really committed to it and have really found it to be enjoyable, because a lot of people now are past their 7 to 10 episode dip. You know, they may be approaching or getting past their 20 to 25 episode dip. And a lot of times if you get past that, you can really get rolling. You can really get moving. So it'll be interesting to see as we move forward, you know, how many of those shows are able to do that. And at some point, you know, you can't just churn out a new episode every single week forever. You know, at some point, you know, we'll go back through and pull in some greatest hits and do some different things, you know, to allow, you know, give people a break. And also because you do a podcast for long enough, you've got a lot of great content in your archive that new listeners aren't going to be aware of. So I think there are some smart ways to bring that content back in. And then also, you know, give your hosts a rest. And I think people listen to this, you know, who maybe haven't started a podcast. That's something important to remember. You know, you're not signing up to do a new show a week in perpetuity. You certainly can, you know, but there are ways to, you know, structure it in terms of seasons, you know, bring in your, you know, pull back episodes from your archive, that kind of thing. So, you know, at some point we'll start doing that because we're getting to the point now where we have that kind of archive that it's like, okay, it's pretty powerful. We got to do something with this.
Since you've got, I guess, a vast amount of experience with a number of different shows, either in-house or externally, what do you think the biggest mistake that people, either in the early stages, either just getting started or maybe in that 7 to 10 episode, what's the biggest mistake that you see people make that kind of hurts their long-term success?
Getting impatient, okay. I think. Getting impatient with your own aptitude for it, especially if you're new.
Mm-hmm.
But more than that, getting impatient at the audience response. You know, I think, again, you know, I talked about this earlier when we launched the Showrunner, having the built-in audience of Copyblogger and Rainmaker FM was huge for us to go out and have a built-in audience to hear what we wanted to say. That was huge. But I've been on the other side of it where you start a show with no one listening and you're just putting it out there. No one is going to listen to it, and you've got to build it brick by brick, audience member by audience member, and it goes slow. And sometimes, you know, you have a week where it's the same download numbers as the week previous, and the next week is fewer, and it's like, I'm not even growing. I'm getting smaller.
Mm.
You know, but it's just like that in the beginning, you know? And so I think you got to be patient with yourself, be patient with the audience, because in a lot of ways, it is like a snowball, you know, and you've got to, instead of worrying about the fact that you don't have 1,000 people on your email list, focus on the 5 people that you do have, because those are the people who clearly have gotten something from you, and they may end up being your best advocates. They may be the people who go share it with the next 5 that you get. And then, you know, and it starts to happen, and it starts to build on itself. But I think a lot of people get really impatient that, oh, podcasting is great. Everybody's talking about podcasting. Okay, cool. I can do this, and a month later, I'll have everything.
Right,
it's like,
right.
No, this is a long-term strategy, and if you're in it for the short term, you probably shouldn't even start. You know, it is really something to get into and make a long-term commitment. And I think the people I've seen who have done that have been really happy that they have. It doesn't mean that you can't ever quit or that you should never quit. You know, obviously there are times when that is the smart decision. But I think if you go into it really thinking that you're going to get this quick hit success and that everything's going to be perfect and all that, you know, you're just setting yourself up for failure.
Yeah, that's great advice and probably a good place to wrap up. Where do you want people to go to find out more about you? Where, and you've got your hands in a lot of different pots.
I mean, certainly, you know, we've been talking a lot about podcasting. So anybody who wants to learn more about that, you know, the Showrunner is probably the best place to go. And showrunner.fm is the URL. You can go there. That's the show page. And you can both sign up for the email list to stay updated. And you'll get our content series, The 4 Essential Elements of a Remarkable Podcast, which basically it's where we break down our core curriculum, you know, authenticity, usefulness, sustainability, profitability. Those are the 4 essential elements. And we talk about what those are, what they mean. And the great thing about them is they're not just specific to podcasting. It's really about creating an audience experience. So whether you're blogging, whether you're planning an event, you know, whatever you're doing, I think understanding those elements and how they work together can be really beneficial. So if you want to continue this conversation that we've been having right here, something relevant to that, I think going to the showrunner and getting on that email list would be the best thing to do.
And I'm going to make sure that all the various things that we've mentioned are linked to in the show notes once the episode is live. But that should be it. Jared, I really appreciate your time and your insight. You've provided quite a lot to digest. It's been really helpful. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. No, this is fun, and I appreciate you having me on.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Remarkable, part of the Super Simple Podcast Network. I appreciate you taking time to join me, and I hope you learned as much as I did. You can find my notes, relevant links, and a full transcript at supersimple.com/Jared. That's SUPERSIMPL.com/JEROD. If you enjoyed this episode or other episodes of Remarkable, please do me a favor and share it with someone you know that would also enjoy it. Also, just like on Amazon, user reviews let people know if the show is worth listening to or not. So if you don't mind, please take a minute to head over to iTunes and leave me an honest review. I would greatly appreciate it. And if you have a question about marketing, a suggestion or feedback, or if you'd simply like to connect, email me at dave@supersimple.com. I'd love to hear from you. This episode of Remarkable is sponsored by Bethesda Roasting Company, a North Carolina-based small-batch gourmet coffee roaster that prides itself on offering only the highest quality, single-origin coffee from around the world, perfectly roasted to present the best flavors of each varietal. In addition to using only quality beans, all coffees are roasted within 72 hours of being shipped. And as a self-proclaimed foodie and coffee snob myself, I can tell you from experience that this is absolutely the best coffee that I've ever brewed. Head on over to BethesdaCoffee.com to check out their monthly subscription plans. Their coffee is shipped in 6-ounce bags to ensure freshness, and each one comes with details on the coffee and the tasting notes. Use code SUPERSIMPLE50 at checkout to save 50% off on your first purchase of either their Explorer or Adventurer subscriptions. Again, that's BethesdaCoffee.com, and that code is SUPERSIMPLE50. Our theme music was composed by Julio Gonzalez at Zymer. Zymer, or Remix spelled backwards, offers sound design and audio post-production for podcasts, video, audiobooks, game apps, and radio. Learn more or contact them today at Zymer.co. That's Zymer.co. Mention that you heard them here on the Remarkable Podcast and save 50% off of any of their services. And if you would like additional marketing resources, early access to my free podcast marketing course designed to help you grow your audience and reach more listeners, and to be notified when I release future episodes, head on over to theremarkablepodcast.com. That's it. Thanks again for listening to this episode of Remarkable.